song, Carolyn, as me and I were going to break up the
So, just forewarning that we are recording now. If anybody doesn't want to see themselves on screen, you can just turn off your video. Nobody will be offended. So, Happy New Year. Welcome, everybody. We're happy to have you all here to participate in the meeting tonight. A lot has happened since our last meeting, and a lot has stayed the same. But we're glad that we can all be here tonight to discuss our school and the students in it that we care so much about. Before we get started with the meeting, though, we will have Jen do the land acknowledgement.
As we gather together here for Howard Junior Public School, we acknowledge the sacred land on which Howard operates. It has been a site of human activity for 15,000 years. This land is the territory of the Huron-Wendat and the Petun First Nations, the Seneca, and most recently, the Mississaugas of the Credit River. The territory was the subject of the Dish With One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant, an agreement between the Iroquois Confederacy and Confederacy of the Ojibwe and Allied Nations to peaceably share and care for the resources around the Great Lakes. Today, the meeting place of Toronto is still the home to many Indigenous peoples from across Turtle Island, and we are grateful to have the opportunity to work in the community on this territory.
Great, thank you, Jen. So tonight we have a few items that I think will take up a lot more time. So I'll just move right over to Esme with her principal's update.
Okay, great. Thanks. Nice to see everybody. You can tell I got so excited when I saw Adele that clearly we're not in the building now, and I really miss seeing the kids every day. And it is actually very strange to be on a meeting with you all not wearing a mask because I'm in the building. So that's nice, but definitely Susie and I miss the kids. We have no idea about a return date. We know we're every couple of weeks we do have meetings with Toronto Public Health, and the last meeting we had was last week, and it was Dr. Vanita Dubé who spoke to us, and she didn't come out and say we were going back on the 10th, but she seemed pretty positive. Like she was talking about things leveling off, and she just kept using phrases like, we're planning to go back, when we go back, things look good about going back. So Susie and I were kind of reading between the lines, and we're hoping that what they're saying is that we're going to be able to go back, because we also know that the Hospital for Sick Kids released research that said that kids need to be in school. And I know it's not the same across everywhere in the city, but my hope would be that we can all go back and that they manage cases and outbreaks situationally based on different locations and what they need. Because, you know, we've been in great shape. When I look back, I never would have guessed that we only would have had one positive case and then it would have been community related. So I feel like Howard, we know that neighborhood has very low community spread, but things are working in the building. I feel comfortable with it. I feel confident with it. I praise you again for all the work you did with your kids, because we don't have issues with kids not wearing masks. We don't have issues with kids getting in people's personal space. And if they do, we give them reminders and they like totally get it and back away and give each other space. And there's just a complete respect happening at the school. And so we're hoping that we're all going to be back on the 10th. And we don't even want to think about if we're not. I don't even want to say shortly after because we just really want that to be. So we don't have any other information than that. But the feeling we got was that things, from that perspective, we're looking pretty positive. So I did want to just take a few minutes today. I'm just going to update you on a couple of things. One, last month we talked about the budget, and one of the things I wanted to get back to you about was, which I completely forgot about until Tara Lynn reminded me. Last time I talked about how we had a budget carryover from last year, because what with us being home for April, May, June last year, we barely spent any money. So we had a carryover, but I wasn't sure if the board, given all the extra expenditures based on COVID and PPE, if they were going to allow us to keep that money, but they did. So for us, it's just over $50,000, which is actually more than 50% of our budget. So we get about, an annual budget of about 87,000. So we must have spent about 37. And then we have exactly 54,664 dollars that in the beginning of January, maybe January 8th, I saw come into our budget. So, and now being home again, you know, we're not spending as much. We are still putting through orders with the hope that we're going back. And if teachers are looking for things for their classrooms, we're putting through those orders. What I expect is that maybe we'll have more surplus this year too. We won't spend all that money this year. But really, I believe that our goal is going to be to use the bulk of that money to replace computers. So really, we're in a very not great situation in the school for computers, because last spring when everybody went home, the board came and centrally scooped up all schools, including ours, our computers and our Chromebooks, and gave them out to families across the board centrally. And we will not see those come back. They tracked it and they have records, but I don't expect us to get all those back, and who knows what condition they would be in. Then from September to November, we got a few. Susie might be able to tell me exactly. I believe we got maybe 20 computers, Chromebooks. Susie, do you remember?
Yes, we received two shipments. Initially, we received 18 in the fall, and then we received an additional close to 40 just before we closed for the winter holidays.
Yes. So we have some. Then though, in December, asked the children and the parents if they needed computers. So most of those computers are handed out now exactly to our Howard families, so directly to our Howard families. But again, when we go back, we won't necessarily be asking for those back quickly, because we want them to keep them in case they're going home. And we have tried in some instances where people have asked to give an extra one out for a sibling, because we recognize that with it all day, every day in families, you know, if you have three children and you have two people working, you may not have five. So that's where a lot of ours have gone. And we actually have not been able to accommodate the last few requests we had. So what are my thinking at this point is, obviously I'll go to the budget committee with the teachers and we'll figure it all out. But the bulk of that money will go towards replacing computers for the kids' use in the school. And then I also wanted to mention, and we're not going to plan it and talk about it tonight. Sorry, solve it. We're not going to solve it tonight. But one of the responsibilities is for the school. We create a school improvement plan every year. And we don't actually really, at this point, since we had Dr. Malloy, we don't actually even call it the school improvement plan. We call it our three foci, because it's definitely based on a guide of how we're going to improve the school, but it's around three foci. So one is student achievement, one is well-being, and one is equity. So we presented that in December. And then after that meeting, I did send a draft. So it says draft on it. I did send a draft copy to Tara Lynn, because one of the appropriate steps that we take is to share it with council and parents and to get feedback. So I gave that. So I don't know whether for us to get feedback, maybe that's sort of just the one thing we could consider. So I have the superintendent now it's going to be virtual, but she's going to be meeting with Susie and I to discuss our three foci. And I would love to be able to have some parent feedback or parent input into that by then. Again, I don't have an exact date. That's all just being scheduled. So maybe what we could do is we could consider either, Tara Lynn, if you haven't already, sending that out to all of the council members or parents that are interested. And I can send it out by school messenger. And we could maybe put, say, 45 minutes. I think it'll take longer than 30 minutes, but not quite an hour, just to kind of get feedback from people, especially in terms of the equity one. So I thought maybe one of the things we could do is set some time aside at the next council meeting where we could take time to actually discuss it. or it could be a matter of people emailing me their feedback. Or it could look like a Google Meet one afternoon for people mm-hmm. who would like to let me know. So I just wanted to put that out there to just see what we thought, how best to do that.
I love that idea. I know that when my feedback was requested at the end of last year, when Debbie Donsky's office had forwarded it to me, I think I was given about 48 hours to complete and return. So the ability for me to be able to reach out to the larger parent community was a little bit limited, and I didn't feel comfortable with that. So I do think that that would be fantastic if we could bring in a larger group and at least give a heads up to parents that this thing is being thought about and developed and that they can participate in that. That'd be great.
Yeah, and there are mechanisms in place whereby, Esme, if you're able to send it out to the whole community, we can point them back to an anonymous form and gather up comments in aggregate. So if people have things they're not comfortable saying in front of the room, there's a forum that they can use as well. And also if people aren't able to sit down and attend an in-person session or an online session, as it is. In-person now just means everybody's on the screen at the same time, it seems. But I think we should send it out to everybody and then point them back to a spot on the website and gather feedback that way.
Okay, great.
Esme, do you have anything more that you wanted to update us on, or is that...
No, that's it for now, because I know we have lots of other school council budget things to talk about. So, yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I think that there were some pretty reassuring words in there and some great opportunities, I think, in the future that we can working on for the school, especially with the three foci. I almost called it the school improvement plan again.
You can. You definitely can call it that. It's just, that's, I guess, still the umbrella, but it's kind of now our three foci, yeah.
I just saw a question from Alice Romo, Esme. She's asking if we can be emailed the three foci or a guideline for it. I don't know, Alice, if you want to unmute yourself and ask the question, you can go ahead and do that.
Sorry, I'm eating nuts. Okay, I apologize. like our SEPA and like our school equity program advisor and different staff. I've always heard about it in all board meetings and all like in PF meetings. There's even workshops about it, about the SIP, like about the school improvement plan. It's the first time I've heard of like a three foci. So I just wanted to make sure that we're talking about the same document, just in case maybe there's another document that I'm not aware of. So yeah, so if you have links that, because the SIP, like there's actually like guidelines and there's links and all on the TSB website, but sorry again that I'm eating. So if you have any links about that, just in case it's something else, then please send that along if you can.
Yeah, for sure.
I just wanted to, since Esme touched on the budget, and I know I'm supposed to talk about the budget later, but kind of ties in right now instead of jumping back to it. Yeah. Because that actually, knowing that we have that surplus, like one of our major budget items or things that we want was technology. So basically right now for budget wise, we have for a budget right now, the money we have is what we usually keep in reserve, but we want to dip into it to help support any of the committees. So we need ideas. So knowing that we have that money covered for technology makes a big difference of what we are hoping to do a direct ask campaign. I'm not sure where people's feelings are about that right now, how people, you know, everyone's a little tapped out. So, if we're looking at February, so that's pretty much, but knowing now that technology is going to be covered, it was a big part of the ask from the committees this year. And the other ones, you know, it all depends when we go back and what people want to do virtually, how people, you know, I'm sure there's things we could do, a virtual Zoom disco party, and whether we want to pay for that or a parent can, you know, take it up. That's sort of things we're looking at right now. So from a budget perspective, what Esme has told us is great news for us.
I would just add to that, that in the past, we have only ever received very, very, very little amounts in the budget for computers. So like last year we got 2,700 and that's not very many computers. So we traditionally, schools have always looked to fundraising and to parents. So that's why it's always been such a great and worthwhile priority school council has had. But I feel like this is the one year, and luckily we have that money because now we have a bigger dent. All of the building and building and building and sustaining that computer program we had with augmenting it every year with new materials as we had to get rid of some older materials, like it's just gone. So it actually really does for sure relieve you of what's always been a huge responsibility or burden or you know, generous offer to buy us computers. And then that's one way that we can maybe alleviate some pressure on you. And there may be other things that with that money we can, like this year might look different. And if you find that you have an ask that you can't manage, maybe we can take that on.
Well, and that's one of the ones was equity, which you've already discussed. And so that is one of the, not as big as the technology, but so, and we can discuss that. So everything, like we're just figuring everything out. So, and again, what that looks like in an online format versus being back in school, you know, all these requests were made when we're in school and hoping you'll stay in, and then, well,
I know
the numbers. Well,
we do have, so in the last email that went out, the newsletter, there is the how we can help. And if you follow the link, there's a quick little Survey Monkey trying to gather up ideas about what are the things we can do to help the community and offset, you know, the lingering days that's stuck at home. So we're looking for ideas and we're gathering up through this Survey Monkey that you can access through how we can help on the website under news.
Yeah, awesome.
Great. Okay, so if there aren't any questions about budget, or maybe I should just say, are there any questions about budget from the group? You can always throw a chat message in too if you're shy.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if it comes to you at any point, please feel free to send a message. So tonight, it's a little bit of a last minute ad, but I'm really pleased that this is happening. We've got Mandy Moore and Ward 7 trustee Robin Pilkey with us this evening to discuss the French program review and do a little bit of a Q&A. Mandy Moore is a parent at Howard, but she is also the chair of the French as a Second Language Advisory Committee. And last week, Mandy spoke at the Ward 7 virtual forum on equity regarding the TDSB's French program review. So she's going to update us on that. And then if there are any questions, which I'm going to assume that there are, she's here and so is Robin to answer those. So welcome, Mandy and Robin, and I'll hand the floor over to you.
Excellent. Thanks, Tara Lynn. Can everybody hear me? Good. I am actually not the chair of the French as a Second Language Advisory Committee anymore. I stepped down after last year, so I did 2 years and there's a new chair now. So I'm still on as the Ward 7 rep to that committee. And I'm sorry I haven't been to more parent council meetings. I have a job now that has a lot of evening requirements and it's been a little bit busy. So I just wanted to give a quick overview. I want to take questions, and I think it's great that Robin's here because she has a whole wealth of knowledge that's different from my view as a parent sometimes. But so I have a daughter in grade 7 at Fern, who was in the English stream at Howard in grades 4, 5, and 6. That's when we moved into the neighborhood. And I have 2 sons at Howard in grades 1 and 3 in French immersion. So it's a good perspective to have had some English stream and some French stream experience. And what drove me to sort of find the committee and want to get involved in it was kind of the difference I observed between the French and the English streams. And I think some of you have observed that. And Adele had a good 3 years. She had split classes and some things like that. I sort of made it a mission to try to figure out if there was a way to improve the English stream. I speak some French. My mom spoke French. She learned it later in life in university. I am a new Canadian, newish, 15 years. And I think it's amazing that it's a bilingual country. And I'm a big supporter of French as a second language and French immersion. But I did observe kind of the differences and for sure the perceptions about the differences between the French and the English streams at Howard. There's a different track to high school. There's more split classes. So I joined the committee. I learned a lot about how the trustees work, what they do, what staff does. I was able to give a lot of parent feedback and meet a lot of other parents. And as you can imagine, the French as a Second Language Advisory Committee is full of parents who are super, super, super pro-French and pro-French immersion, which is awesome. And I was one of the few parents actually who had a kid in the English stream. But since I'm also very pro-French immersion, it was great. It was a great experience. So we did the French review over the last couple years. It feels forever, Robin. I can't even remember when the surveys were. I think it wasn't last school year, but the one before.
I think it was 2 years ago, actually.
Yeah, it's been a while because it was a massive data collection. They surveyed thousands of students, grade six and above, I think, were answered the surveys. Parents, staff,
teachers.
It was big. And then they rolled up all the data. They collected the data, they presented us the data, and then they went to work making recommendations. And out of that French review came one of the biggest changes, which is the starting points. So it used to be there was SK French immersion, grade four French immersion, grade seven French immersion, then an extended French program that started in grade four that was 50-50. And there was also a partial immersion program whose name I always forget that started in grade seven.
Extended
French also in grade seven. Thank you, Robin. So start points are going to be JK in not next year, but the year after, I believe. Immersion will start then, early immersion, and then there will be grade four immersion, and that's it. So no more extended French, no more grade seven start. So that was a big outcome. So that was a big change to sort of what everyone was used to when Swansea and Fern in our ward both had extended French programs, so that's a change for them as well. Beefing up the core French program, so the 40 minutes a day for kids in the English stream was a big thing that came out of the French review. Some of this stuff that came out of the review was for secondary schools, so I won't go into that, and also a lot of it's over my head because I don't have any experience with that. So if you have questions about secondary French, you can ask Robin. And then, as we know, and why a lot of people are interested in here tonight is there was an effort. There are about 11 schools, I think, Robin can correct me, where French immersion is so popular that the English stream is really little and faces some of the challenges that the Howard English stream faces. So one of the decisions that the staff made at the board level is to rebalance those schools by redirecting senior kindergarten French immersion students to neighboring schools to try to create more of a 50-50 split between French and English. The principal at Runnymede's been doing this a long time. They've been enforcing a 50-50 split for a long time. And I have a bunch of friends at Runnymede, probably some of you do too. There isn't this same issue. It's not, there isn't the same kind of seeming divide between French and English. And many parents choose English because they choose English and they, for whatever reason, don't want to do French immersion. What I have observed and what I've heard an awful lot of parents say is they actually don't want French immersion for their kids, but they choose it because they don't want the English stream. And I think that's a really bad outcome. I don't think that's a great situation. So I'm not saying I had a lot to do with this decision. I don't know if my presence as the chair on the committee helped even a little bit. I think a lot of people at the board thought this was a decision whose time had come anyway, but I am really pleased that this is happening because I think Howard deserves to have an English stream that is healthy and robust and people that and that people don't avoid. I don't think anyone should choose French immersion for their kids because the English stream is deficient in any way. So that's where we got to now. So there's been other schools where they've implemented similar things. This is the second year that Howard and these other schools have redirected some of their SKs to other schools. And I hope, and I'm gonna go to questions soon. I talked longer than I really wanted to, but my hope really is that a lot of parents at Howard will choose the English stream and stick around in the neighborhood and have a shorter walk or have the continuity of JK to SK for your kids and you choose it because it's the right choice for your kid. And some people, and Fern's a great school. I have a daughter at Fern, and my husband's mother's cousin is the assistant principal there. And I think it's lovely and they have a pool. So I think there's great reasons to choose Fern and great reasons to choose French immersion. And I hope that the English stream will start to take off and that people will feel comfortable choosing that for their kids. Robin, did I say anything wrong or miss anything?
I was hoping I'd have an opportunity just to add a couple things, like some things. And just so you know, Mandy and I chaired the French as a Second Language together. We both stepped down. I was the trustee chair for that committee for the last 6 years. The other thing I think that's important to know that the introduction of middle immersion. So as opposed, for those of you who may not be clear, extended French was basically 50-50 English starting in grade four, and it would go up through grades four to grade eight, and then you possibly could go to extended French at high school. That has been eliminated 100%, and we're going to middle immersion, which means that students who may not have entered French at JK, who may have missed the entry point, still have an opportunity for a full French immersion experience. So that will start in fourth grade, and those students, at the same time as the kids who start in SK start to get less and less French, those kids will go to 100% French, and based on the number of hours of French that people will get, those two groups will meet in grade nine, and then will continue in grade nine together as immersion together, so there'll only be one stream. That was one of the big results that came out of the French review. And a lot of that actually was driven by a problem I'm sure many of you are aware of, lack of French teachers. By having too many different streams of French, extended, immersion, sort of immersion, we were causing more problems with our problems with acquisition of French teachers. The other thing too is that part of the change around balancing schools also had to do with what we call efficient. Many of you also may have been around when we had our giant crazy budget problem 2 years ago and had to do a big hack everywhere. One of the things that drives that problem is that we weren't doing something called efficient staffing, which means that we would end up with smaller classes, often in French. And that would require, but we weren't fully funded for the teachers that we would have. So we have moved to efficient staffing, which means that we won't have if we have 50 kids who are accepted to French, by the time you get to grade one, that's actually requires three teachers. Because there's a primary class cap at 20. Even though the classes would not be at 20, we would require three different teachers. And likely, often the English classes would then go to splits because the teachers are not based on the makeup of the kids in the school. It's just based on quantity often. So efficient staffing also led to streamlining in the number of French classes we would offer. The board did not change its policy that everyone who applies on time and their kid is the right age gets into a French program. There never has been a guarantee that any of those would be in your local school. Like for the most part, people do, but there is a lot of redirection, as Mandy can talk about. It may not be it may not have been as obvious in some of our local neighborhoods, but redirection across the system is quite extensive. Did I miss anything, Mandy?
I forget about the efficient use of schools model. Yeah, I think it's a shame to make decisions based on budgets, but it just is, it's a reality we have to live with.
The issue too is that, I think you were talking about your foci and our emphasis as a board on equity as well. And there were some questions about why French classes, we would put in the third teacher, the class would be smaller, and we would force the students in the other streams of the school into split classes and things like that to make up for that. So that is part of there is a somewhat of an equity issue about that as well. But if we go to efficient staffing, then generally we open up enough spots to make the staffing work. And this has actually happened as well in alternative schools. You may have friends who have kids in alternative schools, and I know there's a lot of people who love it for the alternative. And for a lot of people, that meant my kid had a small class. That doesn't exist anymore. Those two, we went for efficient staffing, and many of those schools as well, the classes became a regular size, similar to what we would have in a non-alternative school.
So we're receiving a lot of questions in the chat.
Yeah, I'm sure you are.
Yeah. So I would like to get to those because I know that there's a lot of people here tonight that came specifically to ask you guys questions. So the first is from Jessica Chung. She is asking, specific to Howard and the English stream, by capping French immersion at Howard, how is Howard encouraging enrollment in the English stream? Are there any changes being implemented to the English stream to complement the French immersion decisions?
Well, that's not a question for me.
Yeah, I could speak to that. So definitely when Susie and I are looking at the budget, when we're looking at the classes, when we're looking at the students, things that we can do at the school level, we're, you know, making sure that everybody's getting what they need. So if English programs need certain kind of resources, we get it for them. If the French programs need certain kind of resources, we get it for them. Oftentimes our French programs will want resources, but they're not actually available in French yet. So in some ways, like online practice reading programs, for example, there's a lot more resources and things that are available for the English stream. So sometimes the French stream's actually at a bit of a deficit. I would say, you know, when I think somebody said like perhaps the English program is deficient, one of the things I've really in my 3 years here been really asking and looking and trying to figure out, and what I know on a day-to-day experience is that our English kids are having just as much opportunity for enrichment, just as much opportunity for extracurricular, just as much opportunity, as I said, for resources and for experiences. So when something looks like a deficiency, like for example, the fact that we have very small numbers right now, so we do have a triple, and I didn't even know something like a triple existed, but we have a 4-5-6 combined class on the English side, which is absolutely new for us, partly because a lot of our virtual kids, more virtual kids in English went to virtual school because they seem to be more comfortable leaving. I'm making an assumption, but less French immersion kids left the building to go. So that's part of it, but that wasn't a decision that we were able to make at the school level. That was a board issue based on staffing efficiency, and that's why they have a triple. But when I've been asking parents, or speaking to parents, or when there's parents that are leaving the French program because, you know, it just isn't something that is successful and a great fit for their child, which is always the parent's decision, you know, they're asking these questions. But then when I'm talking to other families that are in the English program, they always say to Susie and I, I'm having a great experience. My child's having a great experience. We're doing great in the English program. And they do seem like they're wondering if maybe they're the exception. And so Susie and I are saying, well, you know what? It is a great program. We do have good teachers. We do have good programming. We do have lots of things. So I always say to those parents, like, it would be great. You know, like Mandy just said, her daughter had a great experience. Like, there's lots of leadership opportunities, lots of opportunities, and equally as so. We make sure that the kids and the children and the students' experiences at school, in the school, during school hours, is really positive no matter what, and that they're valued, and, you know, we appreciate them all just as much. When we've been able to have overnight trips, so, for example, when we went to an overnight trip a few years ago. We didn't just have the English go one time and the French go another time. We had the mix. So we had all the grade five kids go together, all the grade six kids go together, so that there were opportunities to go across the streams and get to know people. So we're looking at it. We can also tell you that when we look at our English stream, we proportionately have fewer identified special education students and fewer students on IEPs, which are the individual education plans that require a student to maybe get some extra support for some challenges that they're having in the school. We have fewer of those proportionately on the English side. So I do worry sometimes that you know, when people are saying, oh, I've heard the English side isn't very good, I've heard it's not very good. I don't know. I mean, one of my worries is, again, they go to different high schools. So each of the streams go to different high schools, and I don't know what perceptions are of those schools, but I wonder sometimes if that's something, again, that's out of our control, but people are already thinking, well, I want them to go to this high school because it's closer to my house or something. And then I worry that maybe they're talking about, like, could they possibly be talking about the quality of the children? Because the quality of the children is awesome. Like, they're great kids, great families. And those are things, again, that do worry me. But I can guarantee you that at our level, in things that Susie and I can do, we, and with the teachers, we're definitely working on making sure that we are always making sure that that it's not imbalanced in the way we're delivering anything in the building, and that our English children, we're making sure are having good experiences, excellent experiences, just as excellent as anybody in the French stream. So really, one of the things we have been asking families is, you know, when you're out there, can you tell other families that you're having a good experience? Because it's not unique. And I think sometimes those families think it's unique to their child and their teacher and their experience. But really, it is about changing a mindset and perception. And definitely Susie and I are conscious of that and working on it.
Thanks, Esme.
I just wanted to jump in real quick, having had Adele go through the program, and she did have a good experience. And my daughter's my trouble-free, bright, does her homework without being asked. So that was part of the good experience. I would say a couple of things when I talk about having a more robust English program that stood up for me is, I think partly because of the way language develops, there are just more boys in the English stream, and there just weren't a lot of girls in the English stream. And I know the 4-5-6 split is pretty low on girls this year. So I think part of my wish in the balancing is that we have a better boy-girl split, because kids just, they don't socialize very well outside of their class. And it's just, I remember that from when I was in high school. The other thing I remember from Adele's experience is that the English stream kids did not, I don't think they felt specifically unwelcome. It was a weird inertia that they didn't get as involved in the extracurriculars. Like, hardly anyone in Adele's English stream class tried out for the school play. And I'm mystified by that, but it's like a little bit of a safety in numbers, I think, when you put yourself out there like that and everyone else you're auditioning with and you're going to be in a play with is in the French stream. That was a little bit of a tricky one. And I think a balance will help with that. And also the high school stream, I noticed now we can go to Bloor Collegiate, and I was trying to look at the map tonight, and there's half of our catchment for Howard has an option for Parkdale or Bloor Collegiate. I don't know if that helps anyone. Every teenager in my neighborhood who went to Parkdale in the last 5 years who I've met has loved it. So if Parkdale as the stream for the English stream from Howard is a deterrent for you, I think it probably shouldn't be. So
I would caution people about the secondary school for what, mm-hmm. because we also, in concert with our French review, we also have done a large secondary school review in the last couple of years that was very extensive and has outlined kind of where secondary schools will go over the next 10 years. And one of the things that really stuck out to me is presently more than 50% of students in the TDSB do not attend their home school for high school. So planning when your kid is in their early grades that they'll probably go to that high school is not necessarily true once your kid gets towards high school. And the other thing I would say is that high school will look different in the next 10 years because we will be revamping the system and there will probably be many fewer high schools. So that the high schools we have will be larger. They'll offer more programs, more opportunity, but making a plan now about a high school in 10 years or 8 years, I'm not sure that that's, you really, I think, need to look at the current years because that's not necessarily what the landscape will be different if things continue based on the decisions that were made about the secondary plan. I can't say what the decision, what it will look like, but I know it will be different.
So Robin, I have another question that I think would be best geared to you. Other than trying to get more kids into the English program by capping the French immersion numbers, what concrete measures are being taken to strengthen the English program?
I think that Esme was talking about what schools do at an individual level for their programming. The fact is that if you have more kids in English, you get more teachers, so you may have fewer split classes if that's something that it concerns you. I mean, it's driven by the number of kids in the programs, right? So as we do efficient staffing in those routes too, that is one of the outcomes. I mean, what specific things would be done here? It really is up to your principal and your superintendent would be working on those, your principals and your vice principal and your superintendent.
I think there was a comment made earlier about it's a quantity. So the number of students really is the determining factor for how many staff is part of the school and whether or not there are split grades. And as Zay pointed out, and certainly this is a reflection of the COVID environment, there is a 3-grade split currently. Mm-hmm. And in past years before COVID, there are split grades for the English stream, which seems to be more predominant for the English stream than the French one. So to ensure, and I think there's a number of families on the meeting right now that would like to get a better sense of how close we are to having a full class. I guess the question is, how many students, how many Howard families are being redirected to Fern? And how many students are currently registered or showing interest to continue on in the English stream for SK? And trying to really do the math to understand if we are close to establishing a full class to avoid split grades.
So Jessica, I need to tell you that the number of students that are allocated to French is not based on the number of applications. It is based again on the efficient staffing model and looking at more stuff. The planning department decides how many, based on the parameters, including balancing English and French programs and efficient staffing, how many French spots there'll be available in a particular school. And if there's room at other local schools that are not far off that would allow that redirection can happen with, which is the case here. So I understand there was 49 applications and I think there's been 13 redirections. So that's the information I got from the French department today. But even if there was 25 students redirected, there would not be another class opened. They would just be redirected. And I think Mandy mentioned Runnymede. Every year at Runnymede, there's 30 or 35 kids redirected. They do not open another class. And it's less to do about that. It's less to do about what it looks like in kindergarten, but what it looks like when we get to grades 1 to 3 with the primary class cap. If there was not a class cap, honestly, there would probably be more flexibility, but because the cap is fixed and there's a lot of advantages to that. And I know people, you know, I think 20 kids in a class is really terrific. That does affect how staffing works. So even if there was 25 or 30 people who could not get, who had to be redirected, they would unlikely to open another class.
The question wasn't about opening another French immersion class at Howard.
That's my understanding of what you said.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't clear. It was actually about the English stream.
Okay, sorry. Anything to do with English, students. I'm going to let Esme do.
No problem.
sorry, I misunderstood you.
No, no problem. And I've kind of lost my train of thought, unfortunately. So any of the parents, feel free to jump in.
Yeah, I mean, Jessica, I understood your question to be, you know, now, so we've, the part of the information we just received, there's been 13 of us that have been redirected to Fern. I think the curiosity is, if all 13 of those stayed at Howard in the English, how many other students are likely to be moving to English, like haven't applied for the French, and will that create a large enough class that we're not a split class, or what impact would the 13 staying at Howard in English have on the English program? Because that's the dialogue we're all having with each other, right? If we all come together and stick with English, do we create something beneficial for English, or does it still, from the reputation so far, suffer, and therefore we'd be smarter moving to Fern?
Right. Okay. So that is definitely like a question that requires us to have, and I don't have it at my fingertips, how many children do we have in JK already? And again, the numbers that we have in the building are not necessarily the numbers that, because we do have JK students who chose virtual school. So I don't know that I can answer your question, but I understand what you're saying, because it's about, well, how many people do we have from virtual school or from in the building that are in, registered in JK, but didn't opt to go to French immersion, and therefore could, you know, how many is that? And is that maybe 10? That would make, say, a class of 23. Is that, you know, really you would like about 7? Because as Robin's saying, to have another 10 means it's like one class of 20 in grade one, and then, you know, we've got the 3. So you're looking at maybe a full class and a combined class each year. Plus the unknown for us often is that we do have, I've noticed at Howard, we do have a number of families who stay in Montessori, say, or they're in a private school, or they're at home. And even now in COVID times, that's been more confusing for us. So we've had families that didn't register with us for JK, but will come forward and register with us for SK. And we even have some families who join us in grade one. So I don't know if Susie has anything to add to that, but I don't have the numbers to be able to kind of give you a guide. I didn't even really realize till now that 13 had been redirected and 49 had applied. Like, yeah, those numbers are new for me.
Sorry, I can add a couple things though about the JK situation. Obviously COVID and virtual school has made all of this kind of, you know, a bit crazy. And I know, and I appreciate the people who are here who stayed in school in bricks and mortar and those who went to virtual. As a board, as a whole, we're down about 2,500 JK and SK students than we expected to show up. So, which means that a lot, you know, you don't have to send your kid to kindergarten. You have to send your kid to grade one, but you do not have to send your children to kindergarten. And we have, the board has speculated, because there's no way to know for sure, that people kept their kids home because they just didn't want to bother, or they thought it, you know, this was going to be a crazy year and just never mind. So what it's going to look like for SK and what it's going to look like for grade one over the next couple of years is a bit of an unknown, because we don't know if those kids will show up. Did they end up at a private school? Did they end up, you know, going, you know, we know how many kids we generally get out of them versus the Catholic system, like all of those things because of the pandemic has made a lot of the kind of, I get what, now I understand more the question that you were both asking, but it's very hard to say what the numbers will look like because there has been so much flux in this. I would also say, and Mandy can speak to this, we have had many fewer applications for French immersion JK, SK than we have in years. I think, was it 2,800 that we had? And down from 4,000 or something?
Yeah,
like it was a very large drop this year. So that says to the board that more kids are not going to French immersion in SK overall, whether it's because of COVID, because we don't want to put, we may have to put them on a bus. And I'm scared about that at COVID. The bus is a bit of an issue for people, as you can imagine. You know, there's too much confusion. I don't want my kindergartner going on to French immersion if they have to do it online. and the introduction of the grade four middle immersion program, which for many people is, you know, I think a bit of a game changer. It's an opportunity to get full immersion after maybe you've done the basics in English. So, and it's an actual entry point that it will give your kids this high quality French or more French, and yet you can wait till fourth grade. So, which is an advantage in this neighborhood because you will have access to Fern, you know, that's where it is.
I can speak a little bit to what it looks like right now currently. I have an idea in front of me here. So I know this year is definitely not a year. It's a year that goes down in history, but it's definitely not a typical year for numbers. So just to kind of speak approximate numbers, we have about 50 students that are our Howard students in virtual school. And we have approximately 380 students from Howard in person. So what it looks like this year, which I know really does not determine what the numbers could look like for next year, but we have approximately six English classes. We have actually exactly six English classes currently in Howard, and we have for English, and we have 13 French classes from junior kindergarten to grade six. There are 13 classes in French immersion. And from junior kindergarten to grade six, there are six classes in English. So that's just to kind of even show you the imbalance in numbers and classes in the English and the French that just happens to be Howard. So that would be just kind of like another little add-on. So that's like about 110 students in person in the English stream, and approximately 275 students in person in the French stream.
And I could just add that, you know, I hear one of the things I hear, and, you know, as an educator and as a principal, I just have to say, you know, I hear sort of the words like combined classes, split class. And honestly, whether you're in the English stream or whether you're in the French stream, at some time in your career at any school. So my last two schools were all English schools, but, you know, we had combined classes. So at any point in your career at Howard or another school, you know, we all know that children are going to experience a combined grade and they're going to experience a straight grade. And I do, it's a whole other conversation, but I really believe that there are benefits to combined classes. As a parent, both of my children were often in combined classes. I think that the triple was a surprise for people. As I said, I had never heard of that. But think about our French, our English. 2 years ago when I came, we had a grade one French with 13 children. We had last year a grade four French with, grade four English. So, 2 years ago, grade one English with 13, while our French classes were at 20 or 23. And then last year we had an English class that was grade four, and there were 12 children in that one. So really, in the past, the board has always, in my mind, been, and I know they're, again, it's from the system, it's from the top, it's from them looking at the whole system needs, but we have actually, the board really does try, you know, to not make triples or, you know, classes that are you know, not conducive, but I would say there's lots of benefits to combined classes. So as a parent, I wouldn't feel worried about a combined class.
So there's a lot of questions in the chat here and coming directly to me too that are all somewhat around the same topic. So I'm going to kind of summarize it and ask this question that I think that I'm gauging. There's a little bit of concern that the push to force parents to make a decision regarding staying at Howard and being in English, or if you want your child to be in French, you go to Fern, could backfire on Howard. What if all of those students that get the option to either do English at Howard or French immersion at Fern leave and go to Fern? Where does that leave Howard in terms of making the English program more robust if those students aren't opting into the program?
I mean, I think it leaves us kind of where we are now. When we first started at Howard, My son, my middle guy, was really late to read, and I just didn't think French immersion would be right for him. And we put him in English SK French immersion, English SK at Howard. There were only 5 kids in English SK. So he was in a class with 4 other SKs and a whole bunch of JKs. And that's just a massive divide developmentally. I would have stuck with it. My husband panicked. We got on the wait list. Somebody dropped out of French immersion. He went in. I'd say it hasn't been great for him. It's actually as dedicated as I am to French. It's not right for him. And yet here we are, even though you can hear from Esme and Susie that there are many, they work very hard to give the same resources. Sometimes the English stream classes are smaller. It's a better ratio. Like I think there's, and when you look at just the measurable things, the IEPs, there's nothing really glaring. Like I'm just talking as a parent now, forget all the committee and the behind the scenes. Like, I just think what Howard needs is a critical mass of parents to just decide to do it. And I know it's probably pretty, like, it's not, scary is not the right word, but like there's anxiety, and I really get that. Like, I really feel that. And it's like that critical mass of kids with, like, I don't know, Adele was new. So like, it's like a social capital thing, and who tries out for the school play. There's all this intangible stuff around the social side of Howard that I think is pretty real. And I'm not saying that Esme and Susie aren't in tune to that, because they probably know more about my kids' social lives than I do in a lot of ways, but just having a group of kids to be together and to fill out a decent size English classroom, I think if you banded together and did that, it would be I think your kids would thrive, and I think it would be like an incredible service to the school and the community. That's my sort of just subjective take on things that I think probably like administrators and trustees can't say aloud. Like I do feel like it's a leap of faith, and it would be a bit of an experiment, and I hope you do it.
With all due respect, Mandy, it's easier to see the value of it when your kid's not the first generation getting thrown into it. Like it's a lot harder to be on the front line of this decision, especially when all of their peers, the kids they grew up with, are all in the French stream. I understand and value the decision, but I think it's a little insensitive to be suggesting it's a great opportunity for our kids right now. It's a great opportunity for kids in 5 years, but not for our kids that are getting forced into this decision right now.
The only 13 of us are being forced to make this decision, because the other students that were admitted certainly aren't being forced and being explained the benefits of the English program. They're all happy in French. It's just us. It's the 13 parents here that are being forced to make this difficult decision. So where's the communication about the benefits of English to the people who got into the French program?
Well, I think if there were a larger, I almost wonder, people can switch out of French immersion anytime. You can't switch in, but you can switch out. And I think there will be parents like me who chose French immersion for a variety of reasons, but really we would have preferred English, and they just didn't consider it a good option. And so if the people who got redirected plus parents who chose French immersion I'll choose English, there could be a pretty good number of kids in English SK at Howard.
I appreciate that. Sorry. Hey, Jess. I think I think we share the same sentiments. I definitely appreciate you sharing your opinion, Mandy, and Robin for jumping on, and Terry Lynn for securing us the spot on the agenda. Thank you for that. I think where I'm challenged is obviously a lot of the parents on the call are new to this process. We are JKers. So I would love some context around the process specifically, less around like selling on the English program, because that's not something that I'm personally interested in, but I would love more of a context around the process. In speaking with a few other parents, I have a couple of examples of friends of mine whose kids are not Howard Park kids and have gotten secured a French immersion position. And so I wanted to understand, how are kids that are not Howard Park students being prioritized in a lottery-based system versus kids that are currently Howard Park students?
And then secondly, I just learned yesterday that Ferncliff Daycare does not have spots in their after-school program. And so now I'm losing my Howard Park great after-school program that we love so much, with kids that Emma literally has grown up with since she was like 13 months old. And we're being redirected where I don't have backup childcare. So wanted to understand how you guys are closing that gap. And then equally, what's the lottery process and how are you why aren't you prioritizing Howard Park students?
Okay, so I'm gonna answer a few of those, I think, Danielle, if it's okay. And I'll talk about the big picture. This is the, you know, as you know, we are the public school system. So if you live within the boundaries, the established school boundaries of Howard Public School, you are eligible to attend there. Whether you attended at JK, or you decided to go to the Humberside Montessori on the corner there, and you came only now, as a public school system, we must accept you if you live within our boundaries. We do not get to say, sorry, you can't take part.
But there's 13 kids that are not accepted, that were accepted.
Sorry, I'm not finished. So in terms of a child registering for Howard, so if they would like to be in the French immersion lot, to enter SK French immersion at Howard, they must live in the neighborhood and they must have registered at Howard for next year. So as soon as you're registered for Howard, whether you came in JK, you don't have a priority if you were here in JK. As long as you live in the catchment area and you have registered at Howard, which they would have had to do, you are eligible for the lottery. And the board's position is that we will not limit the number of students who can go to French immersion. Most other boards say when we hit 25%, that's it, we're done. The TDSB does not do that. We say we will give a spot to everybody who applies on time, but we will not guarantee it at your local school.
So is there something you could do? Like, I think it's maybe a less tougher pill to swallow for parents. If for example, we register for JK and we're told, hey, just so you're aware, you're not going to get a French immersion spot. So would you prefer to go to Fern right now? So you're not making that transition.
Again, that's not possible either, because we don't know each year how many people will apply. So that, like, I'll tell you at Fern, I can tell you the numbers for Fern. Interestingly, they had 52 spots and they only had 34 applications. That's why there's room for people from Howard to go to Fern. If they had 52 applications, you might've been offered Perth, or you might've been offered George Syme.
Can I just chime in for just a moment, Robin?
I'm just trying to understand the process.
And I'm trying to explain to you that it's based on the school boundaries. We can't let, Fern is closed, Howard is closed. I think when you apply, you tick off a box many times that says, I understand it may not be my local school. Like, that's part of the application process. I've never applied because my kids were too old and we didn't have SK French immersion, but my understanding is there's a box that says, I understand this. I know that it's tricky because you don't think it applies to you even though you've knocked the box off. But we don't know from year to year how many people will apply. So it's very difficult to do some of the things you've said is what I'm trying to say, Danielle.
Totally.
Robin, so I just wanted to chime in.
Easier process for parents. Sorry, Terry Lynn.
No, that's okay.
If you reframed and challenged like TDSB to make that decision earlier, so you had parents going into the situation knowing what they were getting, because I feel like now it's like it's even a disruption in your child's education. They're the still young. Care,
I totally get your
concern. And the childcare, I'm like, heck am I going to do? Like, do I iron?
And I will tell you that is something that we looked at, like came up a lot through the French review, and they're still struggling with that because a lot of people turn down the redirection just for that reason.
Yeah. And so Robin, that is actually, and this is what I was going to make the point about, is that, you know, it's a huge inconvenience. And Danielle, I completely understand that losing your child care and having that disruption, especially at our kids' age, that's really upsetting. And I can really sympathize. And that, I believe, Robin, from maybe even earlier it's been mentioned, but previous conversations we've had, is that the move will be for French immersion to actually begin in JK starting next year.
That's right. Well, no, Manny, I'm looking at you. I think it's 2022. That's the goal, right?
Yeah. So not this year.
Not this year.
Still working on how they're going to implement that. Again, COVID has not helped some of these things because the staff spend all their time trying to find a French teacher instead of figuring out how they're going to implement 2022. But yes, I mean, French immersion will start in JK starting in 2022. I'm knocking on wood here, but yeah. That is the intention. So this would not be a discussion. You would be, yeah, I mean, there would still be limited spots, but you would know, you would be doing that right from the beginning.
So there is a question about the wait list here. How is your position determined? We will know where we are on the wait list. And is there a cutoff once school starts, i.e. starts at Fern and get called off the wait list? I think they're just wondering.
So the wait list cuts off in December. I know the wait list cuts off at December because they feel staff have determined that if your kid hasn't gotten into French by December, it's going to be hard to catch up. Now, I know you're coming from another French immersion program, so that doesn't necessarily make sense. But at this point, the cutoff is at December. I think my understanding is that it's a random list. It's a random list generated by the central system. Is that not right, Esme? And yes, I think you can see where you are on the list. Esme would have the list, so she would know.
Right. So I have not received that list because the process is still happening. So once families make their decisions and they accept or they don't accept, then the people at the board, what they do is they then, it's again, it's random. So all those people, it's not alphabetical order. It's not
how fast you, if you applied first, it's got nothing to do with any of those.
Yeah, it's
everybody
random.
Has an equal chance of getting where they are on the list.
Yeah, it's random. And so it comes to me and then it's my responsibility as people leave to go to the first one and say, would you like the spot? Go to the second one, say, would you like the spot? And go through it that way.
Okay. Sorry, I'm still wading through. So there's another question that I think is a good one, just in terms of connecting the 13 families that have been redirected. There's someone wondering if we can just get them connected and like everybody can share contact information. I know Esme, you'll probably say that there are privacy issues involved in that and we can't just hand out those numbers. But I'm sure to take that kind of thing off of the school's plate, parent council would be happy if you would like to be connected with other parents. Please email the Howard parent council email address and we can do a collection of names and email addresses to amass and send for anybody who wishes to be on that list. And Samantha, maybe could I just maybe ask you, Samantha, to type in the chat box the email address because I can't remember it off the top of my head. And we'd be happy to do that.
And then equally, is there an opportunity to like touch base with all of the English, like the students that are currently in French immersion to see if they're are they 100% sure that they want to be in there? Because maybe there's an opportunity for, I don't know, maybe like 20 of them drop out and all of a sudden we're not having this discussion. So I just think, based on the discussion and the feedback, it might be worthwhile to circle back with those parents.
Danielle, I can add a little tiny bit in my 2 years at Howard. And
that never happened.
Of course, you know, anything's possible. And really, Esme and I, there are families throughout the entire school year from grade one to grade six that it's not the right fit for their child. And it's not the right fit for many things. It could just be not the right fit for their development. It could just be that the child is really unhappy. It could just be that it didn't work out for that family. So from grade one to six, I feel like this year we've probably moved about 10 to 12 children from their family request, from their families requesting from grade one to six into English. We haven't, in the 2 years, I haven't seen anyone that's taken a spot in SK not actually show up in September. I know it's definitely not helpful for sure.
An email would help them. I don't know. I get that. And I appreciate that for context because I really, this is the first time for me. So
I know. We understand.
There's a question, why would existing Howard Park JK kids not be quote unquote grandfathered to the French immersion SK versus brand new students to the school having the same chance of getting in, I guess, with the lottery? It's a good question.
So again, I would say that this is a public school system, and as the public school system, we must admit everybody, everybody has the same opportunity to access those programs regardless of where they came their first year or their second year. And I guess that's all I can say to that. I understand the only people who get grandfathered in are siblings. So if your child is in French immersion somewhere in another part of Howard in grade three, in grade two, you will automatically, your child will automatically get into French immersion. The policy only covers automatic entry to siblings. And part of that is about redirection also. And the fact that many, we're lucky in our neighborhoods in Ward 7 that most of the time the French immersion school is our home school or very close to our home school. In many parts of the city, there are areas where there is one French immersion school. So the sibling policy covers off situations, particularly for that, where you would have a kid who's going on the bus for 20 minutes or a half an hour to get to the French immersion school, and your other it's a way to keep families together if they all choose to go to French. So for example, if you take the Fern, if you're one of the 13 families and you decide to go to Fern for French immersion, and you have younger children, your children will automatically get into the Fern program. So that's kind of, that's the only kind of grandfather, I don't know if you call it that, not really, I think we're supposed to call it grandparenting also, but it is, that is kind of in the French policy, that is the only kind of exception that if it's a sibling, you would get in. But only if the child was in the French program. So if you had a child in grade four English at Fern, you wouldn't get into the French program at Fern.
But our children would still have to go to JK at Howard if we had a child at Fern.
Well, for the next couple of years, yes, you're right. Hopefully, the implementation of JK French immersion would eliminate that. And that actually, I would say, is also a situation that is because of the overcapacity in most schools in this ward. In schools where they would be open to optional attendance, then your child could have gone to JK at Fern. But that's not the situation here.
I know that there's probably a lot more questions, and I do apologize if I wasn't able to get through everybody's questions that were sent in the chat. I'm trying to be considerate of time because we've actually already gone over by 15 minutes and that we have Andrea Thompson, our in-house epidemiologist here tonight, who is gonna do a COVID question and answer as well and a little bit of an update. Robin, I guess, you know, you always make yourself available for the community to reach out to you and ask questions. You're readily available on Facebook and your email, and I can make that available to the group as well. Robin sends out regular emails and updates on her Facebook page as well. And again, Parent Council is a real resource as well. We'll work hard to connect those parents and continue to provide as much information as possible and keep answering those questions. This is obviously a heated discourse and not going to be solved in one night. Sorry, I'm seeing just a few more chats come through. I'll see if I can. Okay.
Is your epidemiologist speaking next? Because if they are on it, because
I'm here. But
if you're talking next,
but honestly, I don't have a lot to update. If there are questions that I can try to answer, I'm happy to. But this is also priority, and we have all the right people here, so I'm happy to answer questions if there are any. I'm also happy to, you know, divert the talk back to this important topic.
Okay, you know what, Robin, there's one last question and I think we can answer quickly. When will we find out if our child is on the wait list if they get in?
Sorry, you'll find out if your child will be on the wait list.
Yes. When do they find out
where they are on the wait list? Well, first they have to have everybody who got an offer to accept by the date. I don't know what the date was that they gave people. Once that's done, then they will issue the waitlist. So they need to know how many people for sure are coming. So again,
I think that date just passed. Yeah.
So it would be shortly, I would imagine. Right, Esme? I think it would be soon. It's usually fairly quickly after that.
Yeah, it might be 1 to 2 weeks for them just to get that together and out to us. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing a lot of, they do, there's not very many people in that department. There's two women and they are killing themselves. This is the, and then they get to do middle immersion after this, so.
It was the 22nd, Emily is saying, and I think Emily is correct. So it was January 22nd was the deadline.
So it would be shortly.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much to Robin Pilkey and to Mandy Moore for joining us this evening to dive in on that and answer our questions.
Can I just say though, yes. I think there were two waves. I'm not sure because again, I'm not part of the process, but maybe somebody can clarify. I think there's two waves. The first wave of people had January 22nd, and then the second wave who found out yesterday or today, I believe you have a date that's still a couple of days away. Am I correct?
Is it February 2nd? February 2nd.
This is a process that requires the landing of Normandy.
So it will be about 1 to 2 weeks after February 2nd. Yeah.
Find out where on the wait list our child is.
Yes, you can call me and I'll have that information.
And yes, you stay on the wait list until December 31st. I see that just popped up.
Yeah. Thanks, Robin. Okay. So we're going to move it over to Andrea. Andrea is a member of Council Exec Team. We're happy to have her as she's an epidemiologist. And obviously right now with COVID, she's been infinitely helpful and a great resource. So we were just going to give her a few minutes this evening to give a little update with school closures, some of the new research coming out. And then if anybody has any questions, she's here and happy to answer them. Go ahead, Andrea.
I don't have a whole lot prepared. Just to say that I'm watching the numbers in the neighborhood. They're coming down. They never got really high. I think our neighborhood is a very safe one. I didn't hear about any big outbreaks in any local schools, but we do know that kids don't show symptoms. They weren't tested a whole lot, until around the break, and there were a lot more cases found, and a lot of kids that were tested were actually positive. So I think hopefully we will hear more about the strategy for reopening, and hopefully a lot more emphasis on testing of kids when they, have a classmate who's positive. But I'm just waiting to hear more about that, and I haven't heard any news on that front. I don't know if anyone else here has any more to inform about that. I'm happy to answer any COVID-related questions if anyone has any.
I do. I was wondering about the difference between the medical masks versus the, the ones we get at Old Navy. Just a cloth mask.
Yeah. So we do know that, there is a lot more risk of airborne transmission than I think originally thought. So the newer recommendations are to upgrade the cloth mask to something at least with 3 layers, but I think ideally a medical grade is probably better. So that's something definitely to consider when schools reopen, is the thin cloth masks probably not the best.
Samantha, thanks. We heard something in public health that was new information about masks as well. And it was just a suggestion. Public health had said cloth masks, if you're using them, it is best if there are 2 layers, and sometimes there's like a 3rd layer for an insert. So I think maybe Andrea, you can speak to that much better, but I guess, is that what you mean by kind of doubling up layers plus the filter? Does that sound correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, guys.
I'm not seeing any more questions coming through. I think we know what discussion was the belle of the ball this evening, but sorry to be cross about that.
Can I add a couple things, Kurt, add some couple links to Andrea? We did, the province ran as many people may have heard, the province did run a pilot project to do testing, like full testing to about 10 different schools across the board. One of them was Swansea, and it was chosen because they had at one point about 9 or 10 different people who had COVID. So they tested almost 1,000 people between this, actually more than 1,000 people between the students, the families, and the school staff. And they had one additional person who tested positive. So yet in areas like Thorncliffe Park, where there's a lot more people who live in multifamily dwellings, lower socioeconomic, you know, that kind of thing, that's where a lot of the larger outbreaks have happened and where they've had to close schools and do things like that. So we, again, as just adding into what Andrea said, in this area so far, hopefully no crazy ones from the Brits, it has been quite good. And I think most of the outbreaks have come through like long-term care, either the Copernicus Lodge around here, all that kind of stuff. And at this point, the board is looking at doing with public health and the province to do some more asymptomatic testing when we return to school in selected schools, but I'm not sure if one around here would get selected again. Swansea was only really chosen because there had been so many people at that moment, so many cases at that moment. So I just would add that to what Andrew was saying.
Anything Robin, in person? Robin or Andrea, safely or from a policy perspective, when are our kids going to be back in school in person? What's your best guess? We won't hold you to it.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, our neighborhood, I wish we could go back now. but I get that, you know, it's a citywide decision, at least province-wide right now.
Interestingly, this ward has the highest number of when we were back, of in-person attendance across the entire board. So we had, I think it was less than 20% were going online, went virtual. In other areas of the city, it's over 60% of the students are doing virtual schooling. So I'm not sure. I think they'll have to see what's happening in those neighborhoods before they decide to send people back. I agree. It would be great if everybody could go back. I'm just not sure that that's going to be the case. What the board has been speaking to the province about is that if February the 10th is, I think, a Wednesday, the request we have made to the province is if you decide we are going back at that point, that you do it only after Family Day, that we do not go back on the 10th so that we can have 4 days off. So that there would be enough of a period where people were out of school. There have been questions about March break, whether it would be around then. And it's really at this point, very, very hard to say. I think it's really gonna depend what happens with the numbers. And my own theory is that it's got less to do with safety in schools and more about making us all stay home with our kids and not be able to go anywhere. So if they have to do that, then it will be longer. Andrea, you're probably more of an expert than I am. I'm just kind of repeating what I heard at a meeting yesterday.
No, these are the things we want to hear, Robin.
This decision making is a black box to me. So we give our data and our advice, but we don't know how decisions are exactly made.
To me, it has a lot to do with politics and less to do often with safety. So it's very hard. I like, for example, I'll give you an example. Like they're focusing completely on people traveling, which is like 0.1% of how people get COVID. So nobody will talk about long-term care. So, you know, I think because the politics are such a big factor and it's less about safety and again, I'm not an expert and I'm speculating like the rest of us.
Thank you.
The experts would agree with that.
Well, I guess, you know, we've gone over by almost half an hour so far. So Andrea, thank you. We appreciate it always to have your input. And Robin, thank you as well for being candid and giving us the information that you at least have on hand and can share with us.
So I'm happy if I have any information. Thank you very much for having me. I really do appreciate the opportunity to help to pass information on and listen to your questions and see, because it helps me inform me when I go back to the board as well. So thank you very much, everyone. I really appreciate your comments.
Hey, Robin, before you go, there's a couple people who had a really good question, which is if they choose Fern French, it's a simple one, I think. If they
thank you, Mandy. Yes, I missed that one.
They choose French immersion at Fern, but then their minds anytime between now and I don't know what, whenever, are they guaranteed a spot back in the English stream at Howard?
Esme, are you open for limited in English?
Yes, I would say, I know that people are talking about maybe like grade 1, 2, 3, but I would say if you accepted Fern, and then between now and September, you wanted to come back to Howard, we would be able to accommodate that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay. So if there are no more questions tonight, I think we'll wrap up the meeting. This is recorded again. So if anybody wanted to review anything, or if there are people that you know that have missed the meeting, we'll be posting this probably by tomorrow. So at that, I'll say thank you so much to everybody who participated and who took the time tonight to join. And we'll see you again next month.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Robin. Thank you, Andrea. Thanks, Tara-Lynn.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Have a great night.
Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you.